Great to have you with us on Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and today's topic is noise pollution. We're learning how it impacts both humans and animals, and we have a couple of guests for you. One is Amanda Shermer. Amanda is head of wildlife rehabilitation at Northwoods Wildlife Center in Minocqua. She holds a Wisconsin Advanced Wildlife Rehabilitation License and is a graduate of UW-Stevens Point. Amanda, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, great to have you with us. With us as well, Dr. Beth Neary. Dr. Neary is a pediatrician, a member of the Council of Environmental Health of the American Academy of Pediatrics, and co-president of the Wisconsin Environmental Health Network. She attended UW School of Medicine and Public Health, did her pediatric residency at the University of Wisconsin. Dr. Neary practiced general pediatrics in Madison and is now devoted to environmental issues and health. Dr. Neary, thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me, Larry.
As we talk with our two guests, I hope you'll join in. Maybe your neighborhood is noisy. How noisy is it? Let us know if you've seen animals reacting to loud noises or how sounds have affected your health. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Dr. Neary, let's start with you. How do you define noise pollution as you run into it in the medical field?
So noise is basically an unwanted sound or disturbing sound that affects health or well-being. Actually, noise is an invisible danger, and it's actually considered the second largest environmental cause of health problems after air pollution.
Man, how do we measure it? We measure it, I assume, in decibels.
Yes, well, let me talk about that a little bit. So listeners can have their own impression. You can think of yourself sitting in the yard and you listen to the cardinal chirping, and all of a sudden you hear an overhead roar of a jet plane or somebody using a power tool. So sound is a vibration. So it has frequency or pitch. It has intensity or loudness that is measured in decibels. It has periodicity, which means a continuous, like a hum, like an air conditioner, versus an impulse sound, like a gun. And then it has duration, so length of time. And let me just refresh you how the sound gets to our brain.
Okay.
So the sound waves enter the ear canal, they vibrate the eardrum, then the vibration travels to the three tiny bones in the middle ear that amplifies the vibration. That causes a wave of fluid in the inner ear that has fluid in it, that's the cochlea, and it stimulates these fine little hair cells. And then each hair cell responds to a specific frequency, and then it converts that sound to a nerve impulse, travels via the auditory nerve, go to the brain, and then we interpret the sound. So it really goes to the brain. We listen in the brain.
Well, my little hair fibers were really vibrating the other night when I was sitting on the porch, and a young couple went by with the windows open, and that was the loudest music that I had heard. And I mean, you could hear it all the way down the block. Oh, my goodness me. To me, that was...
Can I add one more thing to talk about the anatomy and physiology? So impulse noises, like the noise from a gunshot or a firecracker, are actually the most harmful to the human ear. And that's because we have a reflex. It's called the acoustic reflex. I won't go into it, but it actually dampens the vibration of the sound via the smallest muscle in the body, the stapedius muscle. It measures 1 millimeter, but it can't protect us from the sudden intense noise of like a gunshot or a firecracker.
That is really interesting. I had not heard that. I want to hear how each of you became aware of noise pollution. And Dr. Neary, let's keep going with you for a minute. Then we'll go to Amanda Shermer. You're co-president of the Wisconsin Environmental Health Network. Tell us more about that group.
Okay, our group, it's a group of health professionals, and our role is to link environmental issues to health issues. We advocate, we sometimes testify at the Capitol on bills. I've testified on bills related to lead, other chemicals. We actually teach future physicians. We educate the public because we're learning more and more that environmental issues truly affect human health, whether it's lead, PFAS, noise, air pollution. And with climate change, we're learning more and more about air pollution affecting health.
So you're dealing with a whole broad range of things. When it comes to decreasing noise pollution in our state, how's the Wisconsin Environmental Health Network been involved with that?
We were involved in speaking out on the impact of noise when there were some issues, the F-35s coming to Madison, and we got involved there talking about what the impact would be on children and learning, because there's a significant number of low-income families that live near the airport and a number of schools in the area. So that's how we initially got involved.
Let's turn to Amanda for a few minutes. Amanda, I mentioned you're director of wildlife rehabilitation at the Northwoods Wildlife Center in Minocqua. And maybe first just describe the center for us.
We're located up here in Minocqua, Wisconsin. We've been functioning here since 1978, I believe. So we've been here for quite some time. We started from next door. The veterinarian at the time that was working there was Rory Foster. And he kind of got involved because people were finding injured and orphaned wildlife and didn't know what to do and were dropping them off at his vet clinic. And it really, the one that really kicked it off was a fawn they called Faylene that was hit by a car, had a broken leg. They were able to fix her up and release her, and they were continuing to see there was such a huge need for wildlife rehabilitation in the state, especially in an area like this where we have a lot of wildlife and people interacting on a regular basis. So that's kind of how we started here, and we've we've been rehabilitating ever since. We've also added an education department as well. We do a lot of educating with a lot of young children and even adults throughout the year. We have just this weekend, we'll be opening our tours back up by reservation, where we have some non-releasable wildlife that we use as educational ambassadors to help teach people about nature and how we can all be better about living, coexisting together. And things like that. So that's kind of what we do here. We are open all year round, usually admitting animals from about 8 to 5 every day. So we're just getting kicked on us, you know, the baby season's just getting kick-started here, and it started a bit early just due to a very warm winter we have here, and we're already up, our calls this year up about 80% from last year, and we're up about 40% on admissions. So we're just now training our summer interns in. We have about 8 of them every year, so they're here to help us take care of all the animals because we're admitting up to 500 a year that we're admitting for care. That's kind of here.
Yeah, that's a lot of animals. You know, you think about Minocqua, some might consider Minocqua to be in a quieter part of the state, although I've been in Minocqua in July, and it's kind of noisy then. But Minocqua's in the Northwoods. When you notice noise pollution in your area, is it coming from?
Typically, it's human caused. So anywhere we're seeing people coming in. So we have a lot of lakes up here in Minocqua, the Minocqua, Greater Minocqua area. So we have a lot of animals that live the lake life. But unfortunately, sometimes people also like to live the lake life, and it's boat traffic and boat noise will be disruptive to them. I know it's even disruptive to even our fish and things like that. We don't think about how that noise is disruptive. I know we're just getting started in the loon nesting season. That's a big one. Unfortunately, boats do like to look at the loon nest, and it causes a lot of noise, and unfortunately at times causes them to abandon the nest and things like that. So that's mainly where we're seeing it on the lakes. We're also, you mentioned 4th of July up here. That is a time where We get a lot of animals in due to that noise disruption. Those fireworks shows that are going off cause a lot of times eagles to fledge the nest too soon. They're jumping out of those nests because for us it's a firework. For them it's kind of like a bomb. They're unaware it's coming. So, you know, those start firing off at night when it's supposed to be at its most quiet and causes them to jump. So you can see injuries because they can't quite fly yet, so they're not able to catch themselves coming down from the top of those trees. We also get a lot of lost fawns that, unfortunately, when those fireworks go off, you're seeing the doe go one way and the fawn go another, and due to the level of the noise, they travel quite far, and sometimes we can't get them back together, so they're trying to come in here for care. So we see a lot of different noise pollution. Even at the smaller level as well, you know, sometimes birds don't always pick the best place to nest. If it is in a busy area where people are at, the mother may be forced to abandon a nest. And the babies are alone. Luckily, we are here to, you know, take in those babies when they're found. But unfortunately, a lot of the times it's in areas where we don't even know they're there. So it's being aware of what's around you, and we're all having a good time, but your noise is impacting the world around you as well.
You know, I've got to believe that most animals are sensitive, pretty sensitive to noise and noise pollution.
Yes, yes. One place where we commonly see it, even in our own homes, is a lot of people are reporting their dogs and cats being sensitive to sounds and that causing them anxiety. When anything new happens, or, you know, the neighbor, something goes off in the neighbor's yard, a car backfires that their dogs are running off. They have a much better sense of hearing than we do. They use those differently than we do, so they're hearing things louder or in different ways that we are. You also have animals like frogs that don't have the outward ear. They have the drum type thing, and turtles like that, so they're hearing sounds differently. They can, you know, kind of hear you walking up based on vibrations they're feeling. A lot of animals have a lot of different types of ears, so they're hearing things differently and it impacts them differently. And oftentimes more than we are.
Yeah.
You know, we've all kind of acclimated to our noise versus animals have not.
And Dr. Neary, I saw you nodding in agreement there. Do you have something to add there?
Oh, yeah, and when I was doing some of my research, it said that 26 million Americans have high-frequency hearing loss caused by exposure to loud sounds from their leisure activity. That means athletic events, rock concerts, bands, using the snowmobile. So as she's talking about the animals, I'm thinking about how in our recreation we're doing this to ourselves, too.
Yeah.
What I found was I was looking at like all the ways we're exposed to different sounds. And what's interesting to me is now that I have an Apple Watch, it tells me when I'm in a loud environment. So here I am at the UW volleyball games and my watch keeps going off. So now I wear earplugs when I go to the volleyball games. And the other thing to think about is this was fascinating to me. There's a 13-year-old girl named Nora Keegan from Canada. He did a science fair project measuring the automatic hand dryers in 40 public restrooms in Canada and found that over half of them were over 100 decibels. And then when you think of a child, they're like right under that thing when they dry their hands. So I think we just need to think more about how we are exposed to sound in our environment.
I would agree. And I back to the animals again. I read a report, I think Clara Niper gave it to me, of some research done on owls and how noise pollution, just a slight increase in noise pollution, can greatly impact an owl's ability to hunt at night. Because their hearing, I think Amanda is pretty good.
Yeah, they have spectacular hearing. They actually have, you know, when we bring them into rehab, we always like to show the interns their ears because they kind of look like giant holes in their head. They're just huge. You can actually see the back of the eye through the ear. It's so big. And they're actually also offset. So versus, you know, when we look at our head, our ears are even where ear holes are. Theirs are offset, and that's why you see them doing the funny head motions. It's called triangulating. So they're able to kind of figure out where these noises are coming from. And they can hear a mouse under a foot of snow, some of these owls, or they can hear little mice under the ground and they're waiting for them to come out of these holes or shuffling underneath the leaf litter. And so they can pinpoint very small sounds from a pretty decent distance. You know, they could be halfway up a tree, exactly where it is, and pounce down on that mouse and get it. And sometimes in light that they can't see barely at all, they're doing all of this by hearing and they're able to catch that mouse. So you can imagine that when you're trying to listen to those fine, tiny noises like that, it doesn't take much to not be able to hear them.
So, well, I think a 1 or 2 degree decibel increase this research show would cut an owl's ability by about 8% to finding food. So it's nothing to sneeze at for sure. Dr. Beth Neary, our guest today, pediatrician, co-president of the Wisconsin Environmental Health Network, and Amanda Shermer, director of wildlife rehabilitation at Northwoods Wildlife Center in Minocqua. Join in with your questions and comments. Number to call 800-642-1234. You can email us to ideas@WPR. Clara Neipert, our producer, Jeff Robbins, our technical director. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR. Taking a look at noise pollution today and how it affects us as humans, but also how it affects our animals and our wildlife with our two guests, Dr. Beth Neary and Amanda Shermer. Great to have them along. You can join in. Numbers 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@WPR.org. John in Pleasant Prairie, what's on your mind?
Hello.
Hi, John.
Hi, good morning. Yes, I'm in Pleasant Prairie. I live in a kind of a area called Carroll Beach, which is on the lake.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the houses. Anyway, our problem is, it seems to be more now year-round, motorcycles and cars that sound like they don't have mufflers on them take over especially during the summer. They take over Sheridan Road and, you know, other roads, you know, as their, you know, places where they feel they can open up their throttles and speed as well as make a lot of noise. And personally, on our property, let's say it's like a bird sanctuary. And when these large, you know, these cars and trucks and motorcycles rev up their engines, because there's stop signs, you know, quite a bit in the area. So they have to, well, most of them stop. A lot of people go through stop signs. But when they stop, if they stop, what do? They rev up their bikes and cars. And so that adds more noise. And in terms of the birds, they fly away because they don't know what that noise is.
Yeah, that's interesting comment. Amanda Shermer, do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, sometimes that noise, that one's a hard one to deal with because, you know, I deal with that here too at the center. We're located here in town. Unfortunately, we do have like an ATV trail that runs nearby. They can go along the road to get between ATV trails and they come up along the fence and they don't realize there's animals on the other side and they're revving their engines for no reason. They could just drive by and instead they're playing around and again, it goes back to that recreational noise that unfortunately we're having a good time and we don't realize what we're doing to the world around us and just needing to be conscious. So yeah, those birds, they're flying out of there. I wouldn't know this for sure, but I bet you're seeing less nests around. You're seeing less bird activity overall. There's some species that learn to handle it better than others. So there's species that tend to like the more seclusive areas, the quiet areas. Probably really you're not seeing those species. So it's probably definitely having an impact on what you're seeing there. Unfortunately, you're probably seeing more of the what is thought to be the common birds, but they're the ones that are able to acclimate to people being around more often than others. So, yeah, I can imagine the type of impact it's having, and if anybody in the area likes to do any birding, either from their window at a bird feeder or actively searching out species, I'd imagine it's not a great place to see them, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Can I add something, Larry?
Yes, go ahead, Dr. Neri.
I did a little research on this, and we actually have a statute in Wisconsin, 347.39, that says that you have to have adequate muffler to prevent excessive noise or annoying sounds. But I read that a number of people actually put on an aftermarket muffler to increase the sound. So we have a statute, but actually we don't enforce it.
Yeah.
So that's a problem.
Yeah, and if somebody like John would call the local, sheriff, I mean, what do you do? Because the motorcycles are there and gone, or other loud vehicles, they're there and gone. So how are you going to deal with it? No doubt.
Do you know what they do in Paris, Larry? They actually have what's called noise cameras. They measure the sound of the vehicles, and then they find them. They send them a ticket in the mail.
Oh!
There's ways.
There's ways to do it, John. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. Neil in Minnesota, we'll go to you. Hi, Neil.
Hi, good morning. So often on new pavement on roadway projects, they'll install rumble strips along the highway for safety reasons. Maybe they have a high amount of crashes in that area from cars leaving the roadway. But of course, the intent of that is to alert the driver. And then on the flip side, it also creates noise pollution, I suppose, for the folks that live in that area. And, how do you balance, the need for that, the safety, versus the compared to the, the limiting the noise for the people that live in that vicinity?
Yeah. Dr. Neri, maybe comment?
Well, I want to get my comments in on what the impact is on children. As a pediatrician, I really need to get that in there.
Oh, yeah, we'll get that in. Don't worry.
and effects on human health.
Yeah. Well, Neil, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Jim in Kenosha, we'll go to you next. Hi, Jim.
Hi, can you hear me? Just kidding. Hey, before I talk about my snowmobile experience, I want to mention I really appreciate learning about these animal hearing. It's so fascinating, and I've learned about humans, too, that if it's as good as it can get, otherwise we'd be listening to our heartbeat. So thank heavens for hearing. So in out west, most notably Wyoming, I did some experiments with my snowmobile because I was so worried about disturbing the wildlife, and I would get ahead of my friends, stop, take off my helmet, take off my earplugs because I needed earplugs for the snowmobile, turn off my snowmobile, and then listen to the folks coming, and I'll tell you, it was not that bad. They had to get really close to hear it. Now, I will say I was wide open space. It was the Gravant Junction, and it was very wide open space. So maybe when you're going through woods and echoes, it might be different. But I think there's a little bit of a myth about the devastation of snowmobile noise, and I'll take the answer off air. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks a lot for calling. Well, let's go to Amanda Shermer for that. Hi, Amanda.
Yeah, that one's a hard one because... would it be loud enough to cause hearing loss in them? No. You know, it may not be, but what it could be doing is disrupting them from their everyday activities. Again, you have the owls. It doesn't take much to disrupt them from being able to eat, and unfortunately, they don't have a local grocery store to go to get food. So if they're not catching it, unfortunately, they're not eating. And especially during those cold times of the season where there's snow out there, they need food to keep thermoregulating correctly. So sometimes it doesn't take as much. You know, as people, again, we're really acclimated to our own noise. So when the power goes out, I don't know about anybody else, but even at night I wake up because my house is quiet. And it's supposed to be quiet at night, but in reality we're always hearing the buzz of all the electronics plugged in. You're hearing the buzz of the refrigerator. Even like the electricity in your wall has a buzz, and we don't perceive it anymore because it is our everyday noise we hear. You know, we always talk about like chronic and acute injuries and caused by stress. So these animals that aren't hearing that every day, snowmobiles going by once every once in a while, you're going to have acute type of stress going on. So it's there, it's gone. It's probably not going to cause them any issues, but especially in the areas where there's a lot of snowmobiles going by all day long, you know, especially here in northern Wisconsin, there's trails where there's snowmobiles on them at all times almost when the season's really going. That's more of a chronic stress. And chronic stress can actually be more detrimental to your body than acute stress. So it's not like somebody scared you and you got that adrenaline rush and it was gone. It's when you're a little bit of adrenaline is going all the time. It really can affect your heart and your overall state of mind, as well as just your overall health. So that's really what the thing I always like to talk about is, remember, noise can cause these animals stress, and that stress over time can cause some negative effects for them.
And as I understand it, you and your co-workers at the Northwoods Wildlife Center think a lot about noise when you decide where to place an animal's enclosure or even whether to speak in the presence of an animal. Tell us more about those considerations.
Absolutely. A great example is we had our first fawns that came in this year. Unfortunately, their mom was hit along the roadway, and they had been there with the mother, so there was confirmed they had no mother anymore, so they were brought in for care, and it had been really quiet here for a couple of days. They had started eating really well for us, you know, letting us care for them, but for the most part, we keep them isolated from ourselves so they don't imprint on us. They had each other as company so they can remember that they're deer and not people, because that can cause them a lot of, unfortunately, a lot of issues in the future if they're socializing more with people than with other deer. But we had a large school group come through, and they weren't even really housed that close to it. They were on the other side of a noise barrier fence and everything. But we noticed during that tour, they did not like the extra noise of the little kids shuffling by in the rocks. And, you know, little kids are always giggling and, you know, the teachers telling them to stay in line and things like that. And, like, the extra tour noise, they did not eat the entire time those students were here. And even later that day, we noticed they were not eating well. They were much spookier. You could tell they were uncomfortable. They were stressed. They were having these stress responses that we weren't seeing prior to that. So it was strictly that noise, and it really wasn't even noise that was out of the ordinary. It wasn't like cars backfiring and revving noises. It was just people going by and talking that was causing these poor fawns stress. It was out of the normal. It wasn't what they normally heard, and it was an event that happened for 1 hour, and it affected them for the rest of the day. They didn't start eating well until about the next day after that. So it affected them for a long period of time. So
yeah,
we definitely that.
Well, talking about baby deer reminds me to get back to Dr. Neary, as she's talking about other kinds of babies, the human kinds of babies. You had you've done some research on toddlers, and well, go ahead and talk about your research.
Okay, so in children, we know that excessive noise can cause delays in speech comprehension, language learning, reduce attention, impaired concentration. There was actually a study in Europe that was done in three airports, one by Amsterdam, one by Madrid, and one in London. And they looked at reading comprehension in 2009 and 10-year-olds. And they found that aircraft noise was linearly associated with impaired reading comprehension, and it was consistent across all three countries. So we know it impairs learning for children. And it's so important that children hear very well so that they can learn language. And then if we talk about adults, we think about the same concept that that you were talking about in animals, that noise creates stress. So we elicit the cortisol, which increases blood pressure, which induces inflammation, affecting the blood vessels, going on to have a cascade of cardiovascular disease. We know that nighttime aircraft noise actually has a higher risk of hypertension. So that interrupted sleep is so important to health, and we're learning more and more about that. And one other thing I wanted to mention, that there was a study in The Lancet that linked hearing loss in midlife to dementia. And they said that hearing loss is the largest modifiable factor in the development of dementia. So genetics is not modifiable. We can't do anything about that. But hearing is so important that if you detect that you're having some trouble with your hearing, go get it tested. And if you need to get a hearing aid, do it, because it actually can prevent, at least they said, 8% of dementia. So that's really important for human health.
Yeah, it certainly is. Pete in Maquanago emailed us. They've noticed a trend in their neighborhood as neighbors utilize power tools, you know, grinding metal or circular saws. They've noticed on several occasions that somehow is a cue for a Cooper's hawk to enter the area and begin to be a predator. Any ideas or thoughts on that, Amanda Shermer?
Yeah, my thought would be, when these power tools are going off, you have songbirds that are quietly sitting somewhere, quietly feeding, going about their normal activity, and then that power tool coming up on causes them to want to flee. So all of a sudden, there's a lot of little birds in the air flying about looking to escape the noise. And Cooper's hawk, which is a bird of prey that naturally predates on other birds. So that means all his food sources are now flying about, out in the open, panicking and not looking for him, but instead trying to escape that noise. So that is a distraction that unfortunately may cause the demise of a couple of those birds. So my thought it would be that he is taking advantage of those other birds fleeing and being stressed and being distracted by that noise to get a quick meal.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good answer to that. Emma in the town of Dunn, we'll go to you now. Hi, Emma.
Hello. I am calling because I have a question about air brakes. I'm not sure if you would know the answer, but, in some places it'll say no air brakes. And I'm wondering why we need to have, what is it about the air brakes that sometimes they need to do something with them and sometimes they don't?
I'm not sure myself, but maybe Dr. Neary, a comment on that? No?
I don't know. What's an air brake? I don't know what that is.
It's a very loud noise. It makes a very loud noise when a semi or a large vehicle lets, I don't know how it actually happens, but it is a very, very loud noise. And I would imagine, Amanda, it would have, I don't know if you ever have air brake sounds where you are, but it would have an impact on animals.
Yeah, I've always heard them referred to as J-brakes. That's another way I've heard it about. But yeah, it's a very unpleasant noise. Recently, we were driving in the middle of town. I had a few obligations the last couple of days, and I was driving somewhere else in a different town, and we were waiting at a roundabout, and all of a sudden the semi comes up and just, puts on those air brakes, and it was very loud, and we were in a residential area. To me, it seemed a little unnecessary that he had to be using that type of braking system right then. Maybe he could have come up a little bit slower. I know usually I've seen it when they're carrying those big, heavy loads, like he was a logging truck full of logs, so that, to get that stop power, but could he have stopped a little sooner? My thing is, yeah, it's very disruptive to both people and
animals. Yeah. Marie in Wausau has something for Dr. Neary. Let's go there. Hi, Marie.
Hi, thanks so much. And if Dr. Neary, if you could mention again what organization you're working with, because I really appreciate there's kind of an organized approach to this. And then my second comment along those lines is, thank you guys for raising awareness of this. I am the person who disconnected the ice maker on my refrigerator because I hated hearing it go off. And my husband looked at me like I was nuts because he doesn't even hear it. So some of us, especially migranteurs, we're just the people who know, you know, hear all these things. And so I think recognizing that just like different animals appreciate it differently, different people appreciate it differently. And I am seeing my teenager's new boyfriend souped up his car, and he turns it on in the driveway, and I can feel the vroom, vroom, vroom. So as you're talking about those aftermarket mufflers, but he didn't laugh at her at all that when she went to watch the car races, she wore earmuffs. And she said that probably 30% of the kids there were wearing earmuffs at the car races up here in Wausau last week. And I thought that was pretty neat that the people who aren't bothered by the noise are respecting that some people are.
Yeah. Marie, well, thank you for calling. Dr. Beth Neary, comments?
So, Marie, yes, you make some really good points there, that there are individual variabilities in how we perceive sound. So you turning off the ice maker, you must have very good hearing. So, and I think it's wonderful that the young people are wearing things to protect their ears. I always like it when I see people put that on their children's ears, too. The organization that we're with is the Wisconsin Environmental Health Network. And actually, we were up in the Wausau area last year talking about PFAS in your community. So we like to advocate for the health of all of Wisconsin.
And across a broad range of things, as you say, PFAS, but hearing and other things as well. Mm-hmm. Marie, thank you so much for calling. Our guests today, Dr. Beth Neary, pediatrician, a member of the Council on Environmental Health of the American Academy of Pediatrics, and co-president of the Wisconsin Environmental Health Network. With us as well, Amanda Shermer, director of wildlife rehabilitation at Northwoods Wildlife Center in Minocqua. I'm Larry Mueller for Wisconsin Public Radio. We're taking a look at noise pollution and hearing loss and how it affects our animals as well as our people here on the show. And our two guests, Dr. Beth Neary and Amanda Shermer. Dr. Neary, a pediatrician, Amanda Shermer, director of wildlife rehabilitation at Northwoods Wildlife Center in Minocqua. Questions? Give a call. The number is 800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. Jeff in Pelican Lake, we'll go to you. Thank you for waiting. Hi.
Oh, thank you very much. My complaint is I think you got a new sound engineer working for your station. And when you do your breaks in between programs, they play film music. And sometimes that film music has that low, loud bass. It's the same as like when the kids go by with their cars with that loud bass. And it, to me, in my car, I actually turn the station because I don't know how long that film music is going to go on with that heavy beat and that heavy bass. I also might have to say, well, one of the reasons I might be sensitive to it is I'm a Vietnam vet, and I also suffer from PTSD. So maybe that contributes to it, too.
Yeah, Jeff, thank you so much for calling. I imagine that could be the case, Dr. Neary.
Yeah, Jeff, you bring up a good point. There are more sensitive populations in the human population, like yourself, with PTSD and children and infants. And in fact, we learned this with our children, our premature babies in the intensive care unit. We noticed when there was more noise from all the machines beeping and alarming that their heart rates would go up. And so now they've instituted quiet times in the newborn intensive care unit so the babies can sleep and rest. So you yourself and babies and others are more sensitive to sound.
Jeff, thank you very much for calling. And another person wanted additional comments on the noise pollution related health conditions other than hearing loss. Things like maybe high blood pressure or something like that, Dr. Neary.
Yes. Yeah, there's been a lot more research involving that for sure. It's related to an increase in stress hormones, like I said, that actually release the cortisol that increase blood pressure and then have an effect on our arteries. So yes, it is linked to cardiovascular disease. And the interruption of sleep is very important. And that in turn affects mental health. So it's key in cardiovascular disease and mental health.
Wondering what, I don't want to miss out on this. I'm wondering what can we do? Maybe what do you do? Let's say the animals first and then talk about the people. What can we do to decrease the sound issues? Amanda Shermer, maybe what do you do and what do you recommend people do to kind of cut back on the noise where they live?
Yeah, the biggest thing we could do is our own actions. Unfortunately, we can't control other people, but it's the decisions we make every day. You know, if you have a radio playing while you're out in the garage working or doing some yard work, like, does it need to be that loud? Can we turn those noises down? You know, any unnecessary noises that we don't have to be going, maybe don't forget the radio on as you go in to go eat lunch, maybe turn it off. Those kind of noises, being conscious about if we are doing recreational activities, how we're disrupting those animals in, out on the lakes or, you know, out in the woods when we're doing ATV trails, just being aware of the world around us and how we're affecting us can do a big, you know, have a big effect. And also, you know, when you see other people doing something, you know, your friends and your family, it doesn't hurt to mention it. You're like, oh yeah, that's really loud. Can we turn it down? It doesn't mean you can't do anything. It just means maybe we should turn it down. Even around 4th of July, that's a time of the year for wildlife that can be very traumatic and be very hard on them. So leaving the fireworks shows to your local municipal that are having these large shows and maybe not firing off as many fireworks in your own yard or at your own parties, leaving that so these big events are happening only in certain areas versus just widespread. I know we could all experience that, you know, our dogs or ourselves, you're trying to sleep and your neighbor is having a party, being aware that there's other people that may not be doing the same thing as you and just trying to keep it down a little bit more.
Yeah. I think with there may be some things that we can do. Dr. Neary, you want to add something here, too?
Yeah, I think we are doing some really good things for those of us that are using electric power tools. So I now have a lithium snowblower. It doesn't make half the sound that the old snowblower did. Easier to push too. You can use a lawnmower that's electric and leaf blowers too. So it's better for both noise pollution and air pollution. More green space. So the more grass we have and trees that buffers the noise. Like Amanda said, you know, be kind and be considerate. Think of your neighbors. And humans, we can wear earplugs and things like that. Unfortunately, animals can't do that.
Yeah, this year I bought a new battery operated lawnmower. Mm-hmm. And it is so much quieter.
And easier to push too, Larry, I got to admit, on the hill.
It is indeed. It is indeed. By the way, just on another, back to another matter, Jim in Kenosha says it's not air braking, it's engine braking. And I think Amanda, you were kind of getting at that too. It's engine braking that makes the noise and the signs, and they do post signs, but they're to keep the neighbors quiet, not for the animals. But if it would work for the people, it would be working for the animals as well. Peter in Stevens Point, your turn. Hi, Peter.
Hi there. How are you?
Great. Appreciate the call.
Yeah, just a real quick comment. You had a guy on a little while ago who was saying that snowmobiles weren't that bad. And listening to his statement, he said he got off his snowmobile, turned it off, and the first thing he did was take out his earplugs. If it's not that bad, why would you need earplugs?
Okay. Yeah, it's in my and I don't even know if they make. I guess they're making electric snowmobiles now, and I don't know if those are any probably less noisy than the others. But you make a good point there, Peter. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Well, we've got a lot more that I think that we can talk about. If you live in a high traffic area, this is a real problem, and especially if you have young people, if you got young kids, and you're in a high traffic area, I think some of your comments, Dr. Beth Neary, relating to cutting back the sound with hedges, with trees and that sort of thing can make a difference. Is there anything else we can do? I hate keeping my windows closed. Especially, as we get into this time of the year.
Well, the other thing is, some cities and towns have ordinances. So I know that the city of Madison has an ordinance for construction. So you can't start construction before 7 a.m. or you can't do it after 7 p.m. So there's some communities that have noise ordinances.
Noise ordinances aren't a bad idea at all. Amanda Shermer, what do you think?
Back to the noise ordinance things, it's easy to ignore them. Sometimes it's hard to enforce them in some ways, but just keeping in mind that those ordinances are there for a reason, and they should be respected for a reason, because those rules aren't put on just to put on rules. There's a reason why something was found out, that noise is having an issue, and this, again, going back to being respectful. I really like the thought of making more green space, because and I feel like in Wisconsin and even the United States, we're getting more aware of how much blacktop and how much hard surface we have in that green space. Like, biodiversity matters. Keeping those green spaces is an awesome way of going. We also have, we are gearing away from any sort of snow removal that, our normal stuff has a battery operated snow blower and a leaf blower and stuff like that. So there is a lot of different options out there that really help.
Your group does a fair amount of education as well, does it not? Describe a little about that.
Yeah, we do education here. We educate about wildlife. We have a red-tailed hawk that often travels to school groups. She's glove-trained, was non-releasable. We also have a selection of turtles and other reptiles as well that go along. But we actually don't only do wildlife education. We do nature in the whole. We're even frog calls we're talking about. We have rocks. We talk about our rock program and even things like that. So it's like nature in itself. We do try to get at noise sometimes and how that affects us, our everyday behavior and the negative things that it does. That's definitely something that does come up in there. Because oftentimes a lot of animals, such as owl, are trying to be silent, and that can be affected by what we do.
Yeah, it certainly can. Well, I tell you what, it's been interesting for me. I think it has been for everybody listening as well to hear both of you talk today. And I want to thank you so much for being with us. And hopefully we'll be able to do this again down the road. Thank you both very much. Appreciate you having the time to be with us today. Dr. Beth Neary, one of our guests, pediatrician, a member of the Council on Environmental Health and the American Academy of Pediatrics. And Dr. Neary is co-president of the Wisconsin Environmental Health Network. Amanda Shermer, Director of Wildlife Rehabilitation at Northwoods Wildlife Center in Minocqua, and I urge you to take a look at their website. Just type in Northwoods Wildlife Center in Minocqua, and you're going to find it. And maybe you can volunteer or maybe even donate. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller for Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us on WPR News. We're talking about hearing loss and protecting your ears with our guest, Dr. Candy McGinnis. She's an audiologist at Fox Valley Hearing Center. They have locations in Oshkosh, Neenah, Appleton, and Ripon. So great to have Dr. McGinnis with us. And maybe you're wondering how your hearing might change as you age, or maybe you're looking for emotional support with hearing loss. Maybe you have a tinnitus issue. Lots of things we can talk about here, and I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Dr. Candy McGinnis, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Well, thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm so excited.
Well, it's exciting to have you with us. Let's, for those who don't know, what do audiologists do?
So audiologists have a doctoral degree in audiology, and that means that we can assess and prescribe and manage people who have hearing loss, dizziness, ringing in the ears, those kind of things. Our goal is to improve the quality of life of our patients through improved communication and life skills.
Yeah, and we're going to be talking a lot about hearing loss today on the show. How do you define hearing loss, by the way?
Well, mathematically, I guess I would define it as any sound void or perception that is abnormal, whether it would be sometimes you don't hear a word clearly, or sometimes you have difficulty in background noise, or if you're noticing you're having to ask other people to repeat. But there is a mathematical breakdown when we test your hearing. We know what the normal sort of like 20/20 line would be for all the different pitches that we're testing. And we know the line that's like, well, you're okay. Like, you don't need glasses yet, but, you know, you can probably test pass your driver's test, but you're not normal. We know that line. And we know when you get past that line, there's going to be problems. So it's very easy to graph out. Any audiologist can show it to you. It's pretty cut and dried at that point.
Yeah. And I imagine, I'm sure it's hearing loss looks different for practically everybody. And there's, so the spectrum of hearing, what does that look like? From hearing nothing, I suppose, to...
Well, a lot of people look for percentages when they're trying to figure out, you know, what percentage of loss do I have? It doesn't really work that way, because we can hear a whole spectrum of different pitches, from very low, below a foghorn, up to very high, like the birds singing. And so every single pitch, when we're checking it, may have a different level. Oftentimes, your typical kind of hearing problem will be, I can hear low pitches just fine. I can hear when people talk to me. I can hear certain things. But as we get into the higher pitches, the hearing gets worse and worse and worse. And so what happens is things just aren't clear. Like, I heard you talking, but I didn't catch what you said. Or I feel like people mumble these days. Or, you know, it's just not clear enough for me to understand everything and catch everything. There is a different component to hearing, though, also. It's the brain's ability to understand what's being said. So I might have two different people or three different people who have the same graph that I talked about, where I can pinpoint exactly how you hear every pitch. But that same person may be really great in background noise. They don't struggle. They can comprehend quickly. They understand fast speech. And then I'll have another person who just can't make it out even in quiet, or they struggle with any kind of background noise being an interference, and that's a processing problem. So we look at both aspects, trying to figure out what's really going on here. It's not all just volume.
It is indeed. I was just thinking about my own television watching, where if I watch a sporting event, maybe a baseball game or possibly a basketball or a football game, the background noise sometimes causes me not to be able to hear well what the actual announcers are saying.
Definitely that can be the case. So some of that has to do with the what we call the configuration or the shape of the hearing loss on the graph, but some of it may be truly a processing issue. And until we start doing some speech testing in quiet, speech testing in noise, to see what the whole picture looks like, it's just not as cut and dried as people think.
Yeah. Julie in Lincoln, Nebraska has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Julie.
Well, hi, Larry. I just wanted to share my story. I lost total hearing in my right ear when I had the mumps when I was 10 years old. Mm-hmm. But my left ear works great, very well. I've sung in a high-level choir for a long time, played the violin till my shoulders went crazy. But I'm pushing 70 now, and I do have a small amount of tinnitus in my what appears to me from my left ear, but it hasn't really, I can ignore it because I usually have some kind of background noise going on. As a matter of fact, when I get in bed at night, I usually listen to WPR.
So you can listen to WPR. You can fall asleep to us. All right, Julie, thanks for calling. Comments, Dr. McGinnis?
Well, when you play the violin, that is on your right shoulder, correct?
No, it's on my left.
It is on your left. And have you actually had your hearing checked, or are you just assuming it after all these years of violin playing that it hasn't changed anything in that ear?
I had my hearing checked probably maybe 20 years ago, and it was fine.
It may be time to redo that. It's been 20 years. So oftentimes with certain musical instruments like the violin, the flute, the piccolo, sounds where it's not right in front of you, like trombone is right in front of you, the clarinet is right in front of you, but those one-sided instruments, the intensity of the sound to that one side can damage that side more than the other. Now, your other ear you're not using because you had that sudden loss from your infection, and so you have nothing to compare the quote-unquote good ear to. So I would suggest it probably wouldn't hurt for you to just get a baseline to see what's going on. Ringing in and of itself in the ears does not mean that there's a deficit. I have ringing in both my ears. I have had it my whole life, at least since high school. I know for sure I've had it that long. And my hearing used to be, when I was in high school and college, normal. It was perfectly fine. And working in audiology, I get it tested every couple of years, and it's not normal anymore, and I'm only in my 50s.
Okay.
Right? So it's like, okay, but it's not perfect. And you don't notice as the person because it changes so gradually. The sudden loss that you've had was very, like, you noticed that. But the gradual changes that most people experience, either through repeated noise exposure or aging or genetics or medications or, you know, all these other things, it's not really noticeable. So with the ringing being a newer symptom, I would just at least get it checked out.
Yeah. Julie, do that for me and for Dr. McGinnis.
Yeah.
Go get it checked. Oh, thank you very much for calling. Doug in Green Bay will go to you. Hi, Doug.
Hi, Larry. How are you?
Great. Appreciate the call.
You're welcome. I have had tinnitus all my life. I didn't know I had it till I was like 20 years old, but when I was a little boy and I'd lay in bed at night and everything was really quiet, I could hear the tinnitus when I was, you know, this ringing in my head. At that time, I thought I could hear my brain. But But when I became 20 years old, the ringing got louder. I had an incident happen where I had some headphones that worked at a television station, and a test tone blasted into my headphones, and I felt like somebody hit me in the head with a baseball bat. And after that, I'd hold a phone up to my take a phone call, and the person on the phone sounded all garbled, and I couldn't make out what they were saying. And then as I'm almost 70 years old now, and the ringing in my ears are so loud, and it's not just when I was younger, it was higher frequencies. Now I actually hear a constant low frequency hum, and now we are hearing aids without them. My wife can put her mouth right up to my ear, and I can't hear what she's saying. So that's how bad it is. But when I was losing my hearing, here's what's really kind of interesting, is I didn't know I was losing my hearing. And my wife would get upset with me because she'd say to me, why do you always pretend you heard what I said? It's like, I thought I did hear what you said. How do you know you're deaf? But by the way, if one word in a sentence is mistaken, it completely changes what that person said. It's hell having hearing problems.
Oh, thank you very much for calling, Doug. I'm sorry for the tinnitus. Comments, Dr. McGinnis?
Well, that misunderstanding of sentences is so prevalent. And oftentimes, you know, you've been married a very long time, let's say. They used to hear me from the other room. They used to hear me when they were facing away. He or she is just ignoring me. They're not concentrating. Like, there's all these other things that can happen. You know, she says, well, I told you I can't do that. And he's like, well, I thought you said you can. Well, if you just missed the T at the end of that word, you're right. They're totally different sentences. Now, as it so happens, my husband has hearing loss, and he's given me permission to speak about him. He's completely deaf in one ear from a tumor that he'd had to have removed many years ago. And his good ear is not normal either. He has a very significant high pitch only loss in that ear. So he frequently misunderstands what I'm saying, sometimes because he just thinks he knows what it was and didn't catch it. The brain has this amazing ability to do something called auditory closure, and it'll fill in the blanks for you. So it's like playing Wheel of Fortune. If you have enough letters, you're going to guess it what the word is. So, for example, and my husband and I laugh about it all the time. It's very funny because he'll tell me exactly what he thought he heard, and sometimes it makes no sense at all, and he'll go, well, but I was listening. This is what I heard. So I had some sliced up some avocado and put it on toast, and I was eating it for breakfast, and he comes in and he goes, what are you eating? And I said, avocado toast. And he goes, spotted cow what? And I'm like, I'm obviously not drinking beer. He goes, I know, but that's what I heard, and it didn't make any sense to me. So,
oh, man. Doug, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Dr. Candy McGinnis, our guest today, audiologist at Fox Valley Hearing Center in Oshkosh, talking about how to protect your ears from loud noises and how to deal with some of the issues. And we're hearing about some of them as we move along today. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to WPR. Great to have you with us on WPR. Larry Mueller here. We're taking a look at your hearing today and how to protect your hearing, and hopefully how to deal with some of the issues that you may have. Questions, give a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. Gene in Knapp, Wisconsin. We'll go to you now. Hi, Gene.
Hi. Dr. McGinnis, I got a couple things. Number one is that in terms of perception, are you aware of the work by Charles Lieberman, which indicates that you can have hearing testing that's normal, but have reduced ability to distinguish between words and consonants and such.
Mm-hmm.
Are you asking me if I'm aware of research in that?
Yes.
The Charles Lieberman work.
Well, I can tell you that there is an entire body of research as well as testing available for auditory processing disorders That's the category of people who have the normal hearing thresholds, but they just don't process it as in as meaningful a way. Those sort of specialized tests are limited in our state. There's only a few places that do them. They're the bigger clinic situations, the big multidisciplinaries. We used to do them in our Appleton office for many, many years. It's a very involved test. We typically test children for that because as an adult, you're usually able to compensate fairly well. But there's certainly a whole body of people who do have that difficulty. It's just not as common.
Yeah, for sure. And basically, sounds, as I understand it, sounds above 85 decibels are harmful.
Yes, and it depends on how long you're exposed to it. So generally, I would say, you know, if you're going to be listening to something about 85 dB, you could listen to it for maybe a couple hours, but at that point, you're damaging it. OSHA kind of sets it at, you know, 8, like you can't go over 8. But why would you do that anyway?
Why would you?
Right. So we wear sunscreen, even though we don't know it's hurting our skin, because we know it is eventually. We wear sunglasses to protect our eyes, same reason. You know, we brush our teeth and we use our dental floss to protect our teeth. We should always be protecting our hearing.
You know, my Apple Watch tells me when it's too loud. Yeah, and there are apps out there that measure the sound levels. Maybe talk about those apps.
Okay, so there are a lot of apps that you can download to measure sound levels, and I've actually used them myself when we were looking for a car, shopping for a car with my husband's hearing difficulty, being deaf on his right side, which would mean I'm sitting on that side in the passenger seat if he's driving. He wears a special kind of hearing system. It's called a cross. So on his right ear, he has a device that's just a microphone, and it wirelessly transmits the sound to a device he wears on his left ear so that the sound goes in over there. But it's still difficult in the noise of a car. So I've used an app, and when we test drove different cars, I turned it on. Like, how loud is this car? Depending on how big the tires are and what kind of transmission you have and how heavy the car is, how well the doors seal is all going to change that. So I would use an app. I also look at the ratings, like when we had to buy a dishwasher, because that's background noise and that makes it more difficult for my husband to hear. I bought the quietest dishwasher I could find because we live in a condo. It's basically open to the living room. So if I'm doing dishes, we're all hearing it. So definitely those apps are great. I think they're helpful and never hurts to know what's going on around you.
Yeah, that's for sure. I was thinking about tires. I think tire noise is there are stretches of road between Madison and Milwaukee that I found myself suddenly turning up my radio because I'm thinking, wait a minute. And it was tire noise on certain surfaces.
Mm-hmm. Depending on how it's grooved, it can make more noise, and that's going to vibrate up into the car. You're right. And so you turn up your radio to drown out the humming from the tires, and then how loud is the radio in the car, right? So I don't know if you've ever been on the freeway, and you get home, and you park your car, and you get out. Then you get in the morning, and you turn on your car, and you're like, whoa, that radio's loud.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. Gina in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Gina.
Hi. I'm just calling to ask about hearing different kinds of hearing protection for things like going to see a concert or a Broadway show. I'm really into theater, but I also have tinnitus, so I don't want to make it worse. So what kind of things can I use for that?
So assuming your hearing is normal and you're going to go to a show, you could theoretically use any earplugs, you know, the foam ones or the rubber tree-shaped kind of ones if you wanted to. If you're really an audiophile, if you're really into the beautiful music and you want to hear it as seamlessly as possible, and you want it to sound as natural as possible, there are filtered earplugs that have a filter in them that will reduce the sound evenly so it doesn't sound more muffled or certain pitches aren't reduced more than others. They're a little more expensive. You can get disposable ones. Like we have some in our office. I want to say they're maybe They're not disposable. I'm sorry. They're not custom fit, though. They're maybe $30 or $40 a pair or something like that. But you can have custom ones made if you're like a regular concert goer and you're really avid and you like love to go. Then maybe get some custom ones. But to be honest, the non-custom ones are super comfortable. They sound really nice. I'll even use mine when I'm flying. I'll use it if I'm staying in a hotel with other people. I'll sometimes use it if my husband's snoring. Just saying.
So how would you, if you were going to get fitted, where would you go? To an audiologist?
Yes. If you want custom fit ones, you just make an appointment. They will take a custom ear impression of your ears. It doesn't take very long to do that, and then help you order whatever version you're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Gina, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Samantha in Whitehall will go to you. Hi, Samantha.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was just wondering, I have a friend who's 73 years old and lost quite hard of hearing. It's a guy friend of mine. When he said he was shooting off a gun in a friend's house, target shooting, and it fired back at him. So he lost a lot of hearing. But how do you get someone like that to go to a doctor, an audiologist, whatever other audiologist for the hearing to go? Because he's saying he should go, but he's worried about insurance, if they will cover him, if he can get one, you know, and all this and that. And then he's heard people say they don't work and, you know, that he's talked to. So, you know, but you have to basically do like what the lady said here, that you had your guest that has, or the person, whatever the person actually that called that said that his wife had to get really close to his ear to talk to him. You basically have to do that.
Yeah. So how do you convince somebody to go to the hearing doc when they're worried about the cost, basically?
Yeah. So actually, there were a whole lot of good questions in there.
Yeah, yes.
So the first one is, you can lead a horse to water,
yeah,
but you can't make him drink. So until that person is ready to do something about their own ears and hearing, the rest of us could talk all day. They have to be ready for it inside their heart to do this. And oftentimes the rest of us can't understand why. Why are you waiting? Like, you are struggling. You're not hearing. You're misunderstanding. Like, why would you do that? But it is a very personal thing to have hearing difficulty. First off, you don't notice it when it's gradual. Secondly, you just kind of make the assumption, well, I wasn't paying attention. Well, they were too far away. Well, there was too much background noise. Well, I can hear you if you look at me. So there's some issues with coming to terms with that. There's coming in and having to face somebody across, you know, through the booth window or whatever, that sound booth, and fail. Like, you're not going to do well, and you know it. And so that's hard. That's very personal to be able to do that. Now, the money thing really usually isn't the underlying issue. It's just one of the reasons why. So almost every insurance will cover getting a hearing examination. So if they go to an audiologist, and this is not always true if you go to a center that just sells hearing devices, hearing aids. If you go to an audiologist or an ear, nose, and throat surgeon and you see their audiologist, they're almost always covered. Medicare covers it, you know, Blue Cross Blue Shield and United Healthcare, and all of them will cover the testing. And you don't have to commit to anything. To just go and have the conversation, find out what's going on, talk a little bit about your life and what you're experiencing, get the hearing test, and then if you had to, you could go home. But at least you're educated at that point, and you know what you're, like, looking into. After that, they can talk to you about options for going through insurance, options for discount plans, options for, you know, the best devices out there. Like, there's all sorts of choices here, but you don't know until you know.
Yeah, yeah. His glasses came up in the conversation, and Trista emailed us. Trista has to put on their glasses to hear people talk clearly and understand what they've said. Trista says she doesn't watch their faces, but hears it when she puts the glasses on.
So Trista's watching their faces, even though she doesn't realize it. One of the things when we do the speech testing, sometimes if I'm not using a recording, if I'm going to use live voice, is I will put a barrier between my face, my mouth, and the patient, because everybody lip reads a little bit. Everybody does it. If you've ever tried to eavesdrop on a conversation, if you look out the corner of your eye and you watch them talking, you're going to understand more of their conversation. Like, everybody does it. And if she can't understand with her glasses off, I guarantee you that's what she's doing.
Okay. Ron in La Crosse. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yeah, a local TV station, they had a commercial from one of these hearing centers, and they actually do an audio test of what the viewer is hearing, and they go from a lower frequency, was it 400 or 1,000, 2,000? And I hear those, but when it got up to 4,000 on the air, I couldn't hear that. Is it normal not to be able to hear 4 kilohertz?
High frequencies.
That, no, it's not normal not to hear it. I'm sure they played it auditorily at a level that somebody who's in their 20s probably could hear it just fine. I hate to tell you.
So what should Ron be doing? Should he be running to the place to get his hearing tested?
Well, I would recommend, again, at least find out what it's looking like today. You know, where am I? How do I fit on the graph? Because that area around 4,000, there are certain speech sounds that are in that area. And so it's going to be like the letter T as in Tom, or the letter S as in Sam, or the TH in thank you, the F as in frog. Those consonant sounds are naturally higher pitch and naturally softer. And so you're going to miss those, and then you're going to misunderstand. Did they say rose or did they say road? Did they say yes? Did they say mess? Like, what? And that's where you start misunderstanding people, or, you know, nodding your head yes when you should have gone no, those kind of things.
Right. Ron, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Alice in Madison. Hi, Alice.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. My question is about tinnitus or tinnitus, because I have heard that some think that it's mostly to do with your actual ears. Some say it might have more to do with your brain, but my tinnitus is intermittent. So my question is, if I have tinnitus, why don't I have it all the time? And if it's intermittent, what is it that triggers it when it starts? If you have any ideas, I'd love to know.
I would love to be able to answer that question. I would be a millionaire if I could. So we don't 100% know where it's coming from in the auditory system, because I might have a person who has a wax impaction in their ear canal and they have bad ringing, and we take out the wax impaction and the ringing goes away. And the next person, we do the same thing and the ringing stays there. So was it the wax? Well, maybe it wasn't the wax, but they didn't know about it until it doesn't make sense. Same thing with a patient who has a tumor on the auditory nerve, like my husband had. So we might have a patient who has ringing really bad in the ear, and they go in and they actually cut the auditory nerve, remove the tumor. The ear is now theoretically dead, but they still hear ringing. And we'll have another person that will do that. We'll cut the nerve, we'll take out the tumor, and their ringing's gone. Well, how can that be? The ear is completely disconnected. You've just cut the cord, as it were. So we don't always know where it's coming from. We don't know what triggers it. Sometimes it seems intermittent, but it may only be present when things are really quiet around us. And that's when we notice it, like when we go to bed at night or certain times like that. Sometimes you'll get just a big, loud ringing in your ear that lasts for 5 seconds and then it fades away again. And you only get that once every couple of weeks. Like, what's that? We don't really know. I wish I could answer that question.
Yeah, I wish you could too. You know, when I'm online just scrolling around and reading news items and so forth, I get to the bottom of the page and there might be a little picture of somebody with a plastic bottle up to their ear, and they said, I fixed my tinnitus immediately. Here's, you know, click to find out how. Have you ever seen those?
Yeah,
I never click on them.
Don't ever. They're all bogus. If there was a cure for ringing in the ears, again, like, we would be happier than happy to share it with y'all. And we would be, like, I would be taking it because I don't always like the ringing in my ears. But there is no cure-all. There is no, if you pour sweet oil in your ear, it's going to get rid of it. If you drink this cocktail, it's going to get rid of it. If you take these pills 3 times a day for 6 months, you're going to get rid of it. There really is no set cure. Now, can we manage it? Sometimes. You know, if you have ringing and you have hearing loss, if we can bring the sounds around you up into that normal range again, oftentimes the ringing becomes much less noticeable to the brain because we got better things to hear. So we can manage it that way. Sometimes people need, there are devices that have a tinnitus masking system built into them that we can turn on, and we can adjust the pitch and the volume and the sound quality of it, and it will mask or cover the ringing so, again, the brain can stop thinking about it all the time. And that will reduce the ringing for a lot of people, make life much more livable. So there's different retrainings that can be done, biofeedback can be done, but there is no pill or procedure cure. There just isn't, so don't bother looking at that stuff.
John in Mason has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, John.
Hi, Larry. Hi, dear guest. My question is, back in the 90s, I was told by several people that I probably had ADHD because I was constantly asking them to repeat what they were saying. They didn't think I was paying attention, and I was, and I got put on Ritalin, which didn't do anything for that, but it gave me good dreams. And one day I was watching TV, and I happened to lay down on my left side to watch, and I couldn't hear the TV anymore. And that's mm-hmm. how I discovered I couldn't hear in my left, in my right ear.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to Miracle Ear, and they checked my hearing, and I couldn't hear the tone. But when they put the tuning fork, they banged it, and then they put it on the bone behind my ear on the mastoid process,
mm-hmm.
I could hear it just fine. The sound went right, conducted right through the bone.
Mm-hmm.
And they recommended that I go to an ENT, so I did. And they tested me, and that doctor told me that I had this, I can't remember what he called it. It was so many years ago, but it was the third bone in my ear, the stirrup bone, or what's mm-hmm. that?
It's called the stapes, but people call it the stirrup because it looks like the stirrup on a horse's saddle.
Yes. He said that it had somehow, or for whatever reason, calcified or fused to my skull,
mm-hmm.
and that's why I couldn't hear normally.
Mm-hmm.
And he could fix it. It would be a surgery. They'd have to take my eardrum and move it aside, go in, and replace it with a piece of metal.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't sound very good to me at all. And I asked him, what are the chances of it happening to my right or my left ear? And he said, probably 50-50. It's kind of a bilateral thing.
Usually.
So mm-hmm. far, yeah, so far that hasn't happened. But is there anything that can be done short of surgery for that? I mean, is there any way to dislodge that or make it work again? Or
yeah.
So did you ever get a hearing aid for that ear?
No, I've thought about it, but I never have. What I did do was I took my phone. I listen to music a lot. And I took my phone and I put the speaker part right against the bone. And I mm-hmm. tried to find the best conducting area because I wanted to get a bone conducting hearing aid or mm-hmm. hearing, whatever. And the entire circumference from the behind my ear up and around to the front, it all has a different kind of variant, but I can't hear anything in the ear itself.
Hmm.
Yeah, so in your case, if we were going to use a similar analogy, it would be like having a terrible cataract in one eye that didn't let enough light in for you to see anything clearly. But the eye still works. They just need to remove the bad lens, cataract, and put in a new one, and you'd be fine, theoretically. So in your case, with the hardening of the bone, it's called otosclerosis. And you're right, the little, it's called the stay piece, but it looks like a horse's saddle stirrup. It hardens in place, and we do see that in quite a few cases. So what they would do is chip the bone out, put in a prosthesis. The prosthesis would take place of it and conduct the sound through like it should. So if you don't want to do any surgery, the first thing I would try is just trying a hearing aid, because we can turn the sound up loud enough to get past the blockage so that you could hear. Sometimes, and I don't know who you saw, but I know sometimes on rare occasions, surgeons really are talking about surgery and they're not talking about other choices, because that's really not what they do. They do surgery.
Yeah.
So they're going to talk to you about surgery. So it wouldn't hurt to have that conversation. There are bone anchored hearing aids now that they actually can, but it's a little surgery. You can implant back there and it will send the sound through the bone of the skull, the mastoid, so that you can hear it again. That would be an option. It's not a terribly difficult surgery, but it's still a surgery. That's actually probably more successful than the stay piece prosthesis one. So, you know, really you need to go back and talk to an audiologist about some choices and just see what maybe they would recommend. You could maybe just try something for 30 days and see, is it loud enough that I can now perceive sound on that side? I'm sometimes surprised that people don't choose the less invasive option, at least to start with, because it's there.
Yeah.
But you gotta research it a little bit and talk to somebody.
Yeah. John, there you go. Thank you so much for calling today, and good luck. Appreciate the call. Dr. Candy McGinnis, our guest today, audiologist at Fox Valley Hearing Center in Oshkosh. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to WPR News. Taking a look at hearing loss on the program today with our guest, Dr. Candy McGinnis, audiologist at Fox Valley Hearing Center in Oshkosh. You can join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Patrick in Judah emailed to say one way they've limited their noise exposure is by replacing their riding lawnmower with a robotic mower. It's so quiet that if they're working in the yard, it can easily sneak up on them if they're not watching out. Man, how can you find more information? Wondering how to find more information on alternatives to loud activities that are quieter.
Well, I guess I don't know what kind of loud activities you're talking about. You know, if you're a trap shooter or you're sighting in your firearms, or you like to go to the shooting ranges, they have some really wonderful amplified muffs that you can get that will actually let you hear the people around you talking until someone fires, and then it compresses the sound. The musicians' plugs that I talked about, that not even having to get a custom pair, they're really not that expensive. Those are wonderful for taking to concerts and shows. You know, if you just like, there are certain things that are just loud. You like riding your Harley and you have the loud pipes and you're enjoying the free life on the freeway, put some earplugs in. You're not hurting anything to do so. You like to go to tractor pulls, bring some ear protection. There's some things don't have an alternative. You just need to be proactive about taking care of yourself.
Dave in Madison, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Dave.
Yeah, hi. My question involves hearing aids when we have a prolific amount of earwax. Mm-hmm. It seems like every time I use them an hour or two, and then I can't use them. They don't work anymore until they're taken apart and cleaned. Is there some kind that doesn't have to go in the ear?
Unless you'd have something surgically implanted into the back of your head, no. You're going to have to put them in your ear because the sound has to get in that way, and you don't want the surgery unless you have to have the surgery. So I guess I would say, when was the last time your ears were looked at? Because sometimes they need to be cleaned.
Oh, I clean them out as much as I can.
Okay, I'm not talking about Q-tips, which you aren't supposed to be putting in there anyway. I'm like talking about somebody who looks in there and goes, oh, my gosh, look at the backlog of stuff this guy's been jamming in there with his Q-tip for the past year and a half. Why don't I clean all that out for you? And I bet your hearing aid will work great for at least 3-4 months, and then we'll check it again then.
Yeah. Is there anything you can do yourself to clear the earwax out?
Yeah, so ears are self-cleaning, so they're designed from the migration of from your jaw movement and things like that. The wax and debris will migrate outward. And it's only wax is produced just at the first little one-third of the ear canal. That's where the skin cells are that produce wax. And wax is healthy and normal. People are so paranoid about cleaning it out. But it's the right pH balance to keep you from growing mold in your ears. It's a little bit sticky, so bugs don't want to crawl in there because we used to live in the fields and in caves. It is a healthy, natural production of our skin. Now, if we're constantly putting Q-tips in there to clean it, sometimes we push it deeper, and then the skin produces more and you push it in. You're like plunging it deeper into the ear canal than it's supposed to be. Sometimes the Q-tip fibers will get stuck in the wax, and then you have that in there too. But as we age, too, like your skin gets drier. The hair cells, the little hairs in your ear canal, just like the ones on your head, can get a little coarser, a little thicker. So then the wax can't move out as easily anymore. So there definitely is something to as we age. Most people, though, if you just leave your ears alone, the wax will work its way out. Now, the person who's putting the hearing device in their ear canal every day, you're right, that too could back it up a little bit depending on how much you produce. Some people don't produce hardly any, so it's no big deal. But if you're a heavy producer of wax and you find that it's like this gentleman's constantly plugging up his hearing device, it maybe just needs one good thorough cleaning out. And then maybe get it monitored once every 6 months. Have somebody take a peek in there. Is it building up again? Do we need to take care of it? It's not hard for us to do it in our offices. Again, you'd have to see an audiologist. Your hearing aid dealers are not licensed to take care of that, right? You know. So something to consider is just have and don't – I wouldn't actually have your primary doctor do it because, I mean, they can look. But they're just going to have their nurse flush it. Your audiologist is going to be able to tell you if it's a buildup problem or not. Is it enough we have to worry about it or not? And they are, I remove that stuff every day, so it's not a big deal for me.
Dave, thank you so much for calling. And Dennis in Oshkosh, your turn.
Yes. Hi, Larry. Hi, doctor. This will be short. I managed to get shingles in my ear, which led to Ramsey-Hunt syndrome. Mm-hmm. Which led to loss of hearing in my left ear. Do you have any idea what the chances are of it ever coming back?
The chances are probably not, I'm sorry to tell you. Because when you get that kind of a virus, it causes swelling to the nerves. That's why shingles can be so hard on the skin, and it just burns and itches and aches, and it's sensitive. It's an inflammation of the nerves. So the nerve of hearing travels through the skull through a little bony canal, and it goes, you know, from the ear up into the brainstem area. If that nerve swells due to whatever virus, there's nowhere for it to swell to, and so it kind of crushes itself, and then you have permanent change in hearing. So it's really not likely it's ever going to get any better.
Unfortunately, Dennis, thank you for calling. I'm sorry. Sandy and Rhinelander, your turn. Hi, Sandy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So I'm 59 now. My whole childhood I had chronic ear infections. When I was 13, I had a really bad double ear infection where for 2 weeks I couldn't hear anything at all. Then after that, I'm almost completely deaf in my left ear, diminished hearing in my right. I was told it is because, like about 40 years ago, told that it's because the little bone that's over the eardrum is laying in my left ear is laying on the eardrum, so it can't vibrate. And at that time, they said the only way to fix it was with surgery, but he wouldn't do that unless I had to. Is there anything else now, 40 years later, that maybe I could, you know, something other than surgery?
Sure.
So have you tried amplification for your hearing loss?
I have not, because he told me that wouldn't make a difference.
Okay, so that has changed a lot in 40 years. If you don't want surgery, go see an audiologist and just ask to try something. I mean, it never hurts to try, and some offices will let you, I mean, at least listen to it right in the office. Can you hear better? Does this sound nice? Even when you're having your hearing tested, when we talk through the headphones, that's kind of like, does this sound good? Can you use this ear? You know, I think you just, you need to start with an audiologist and have them check it out and see where you stand. If the loss is, again, all just the eardrum and the ear infections and scar tissue and the bone, and you have a great nervous system, you're a great candidate for amplification. It's the majority of people who have nerve damage loss, like the last gentleman who'd suffered from shingles, like the nerve itself has been damaged. That's much harder to deal with. But if it's just a conduction problem, like, you'd probably be the easiest candidate ever to fit.
Yeah, there you go, Sandy. Good luck. Appreciate the call. Greg in Milton, your turn.
Yeah, hi, Larry. This is Greg, yes, in Milltown over near St. Croix Falls, Wisconsin. And I was in to have my ears checked about 3 weeks ago, and everything was fine. The wax was fine and all of that stuff. But I did tell the person that I had at times, just for short periods, I would feel like on my right ear that there was like the ocean waves were coming in on the beach and back and forth.
Yeah.
And so the gal told me that I should go to my doctor and have my carotid artery checked. Is that something that's been heard before? Or of course, I will do that because it seems kind of like it could be something that might be very, you know, useful to have that looked at.
Sure.
So I guess the question would be, does it match your breathing or does it match your heartbeat?
I don't know. Which is faster?
Depends on what you're doing. You need to figure that out. And you can feel your pulse. You can feel your carotid artery. You can feel your pulse. And you should. It is either matching your pulse, and you can stop breathing for just a little bit, like hold your breath for a little bit, or is it going with your breathing? Because if it's a pulse thing, then it's the vascular system, your bloodstream. If it's the breathing, then it's your eustachian tube.
Oh. So is that good or bad?
Well, neither would be nice. Like, we'd like to not have these problems at all. Eustachian tube would indicate that the, you know, there's a little vent behind your eardrum that goes down to your throat. And when you fly or you drive up into the mountains and you have to, like, oh, pop your ears, you're opening that vent up to let some air pressure equalize behind the eardrum. Sometimes that vent, which is supposed to be closed most of the time unless you're popping your ears, sometimes it just hangs open. And then you'll literally hear your breathing go whoosh up and whoosh down every time you inhale deeply or exhale deeply. Then that's one problem, and the ENT can talk to you about that. It's not easy to fix, but it's not a problem, like not like a carotid artery problem.
Okay.
If it matches your heartbeat, it might be the carotids, or sometimes there'll be a blood vessel that's behind the eardrum touching one of the bones of hearing and like boop, 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 bumping it.
Yeah.
Or there's sometimes there might be a tumor with some, again, not cancerous, but a tumor behind the eardrum that might have some vascularization that you're hearing. Kind of depends. If it's an occasional thing, it's more likely to be the eustachian tube. If it's kind of all the time, then it's more likely to be blood flow. But you kind of got to figure out which one it is.
Dr. Candy McGinnis, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I really appreciate it and look forward to hopefully another visit. Dr. Candy McGinnis, audiologist at Fox Valley Hearing Center in Oshkosh, our guest. Tomorrow on the show, we hear from the author of Life as We Know It Can Be, a novel that covers climate change, and we'll get an update about wetlands in our state. That's tomorrow on the Larry Mueller Show. Thank you all for listening, and please stay with us. Lots more in store right through the afternoon here on WPR.